Everybody, the House State Affairs Committee will come to order. It's 5 minutes after eight. I'd like to thank the committee and everybody in the audience for coming in this early. It's end of the session. It's what we call crunch time. So we need to get some bills out. We want to consider all these bills very, very carefully. But if it's at all possible, it's my intent to pass all these bills if we possibly can, and if the testimony supports that. With us this morning, we have Representative Peterson on my far left. I got Representative Johnson on my far right. I'm in the sensible middle here as a chair, and this is my vice chair, Paul Seaton, on my right. And first bill we're going to hear this morning is H.J.R. 31, and the title of that is to support soldiers' burial designations. That bill has been heard in Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, of which I'm the vice chair, and we had received one hearing here. We had some questions on it, and I think possibly those have been resolved.
He
got my book backwards here. So. Yeah. I turned over to the page. Bill's supposed to be in a, what's this? Okay, there we go. Okay, good morning, gentlemen. Would you please introduce yourselves for the record and tell us about this bill?
Good morning. My name's Josh Temple. I'm the staff person for the Veterans Caucus.
A little louder, please, Josh.
Good morning. My name's Josh Temple. I'm the staff person for the Veterans Caucus.
Good morning.
And
I'd like to point out, do we have any Wilsons joined us? And any senators representing the audience are welcome to join us at the table of this room. And Representative Gatto is here. And let the record show that I got here first. Go ahead, Josh.
Okay. H.J.R. 31 is about the disposition of remains. It's about simply the disposition of remains. Service member saying, I want my remains to go to this person and this person to bury me. Very simple. You can look on this fact sheet, and it addresses all the other things we were talking about, but those are secondary. Those are just for explanation purposes. This bill doesn't have anything to do with money of any sum, unless it's reimbursing funeral expenses, actually the burying.
Would you please clear up some of the confusion possibly that I had, maybe some others, some of the concerns we expressed quickly. Express those concerns and put them to rest. I'd like to recognize Representative Gruenberg has joined us.
One of the concerns was the payment of the $100,000 death gratuity payment, which currently is being paid along with the direct disposition because they're connected. What this bill will do will disconnect those. We'll disconnect it so that the direct disposition can be done by one person if the family is not a good family, let's say they abuse their child, the child was a kid or something of that nature, the service member can authorize someone else who raised them to bury them, which can be very healing to that person. The family member, if they didn't care about the child, they'll still get paid off, they'll still get their $100,000, that still goes to them, so they shouldn't have any argument about wanting to bury their child. This takes out of the picture women that are scandalous women and all the other.
There are also some scandalous men that stand around base nowadays.
And there are scandalous men that stand around base.
So some of the current concerns that I had have been allayed through a good committee process, both in the previous committee and in this committee. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions from the committee? If not, is anybody online to testify on this bill? Okay, nobody online. Anybody in the audience would like to testify on this bill? Okay, if not, public testimony is closed. Is there any discussion? Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to say that I appreciate him putting together that fact sheet that straightened out a lot of information for us. And if you're ready, I'll move the bill.
Yes, please do that.
I'd move CS for House Joint Resolution 31 MLB. That's our version from committee with attached fiscal notes. And just make sure it's zero. And individual recommendations.
Thank you very much. Any objection? If not, H.A.R. 31 passes from committee, and congratulations.
Thank you, Chair.
And congratulations to our new Veterans Congress as well. I think this is an example of some good vetting of what turned out to be a very good bill. Thank you. Next on our agenda is the infamous SB 72, and we present that. Welcome, Senator French. Please state your name for the record and tell us why we should move SB 72.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning. My name is Hollis French. I represent State Senate District M, and with me is my staffer, Andy Motorow, who has been working this bill.
Good morning. I'm going to do an ad easier while you're... Great. Apologize for the disruption, Senator French. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and again, good morning, and thank you for scheduling us today before your committee. The SB 72 is really about filling a gap in state law for children who are too big for what we think of as a child safety seat and yet too small for a seat belt. If you're a child between the ages of 3 and 14 years old, you should be afraid of your family car, because there's nothing in the United States that kills more children than cars. 3 to 14, it's the leading cause of death for children is our car accidents. And so this bill is really aimed at trying to put into statute the common sense idea that when you've grown out of your child safety seat and before you're big enough for a seat belt, you need to, it's really simple, you need to raise the little child's fanny up about 4 inches so that the seat belt goes across their sternum and not up around their neck. It's really what it boils down to. When you try to write something like that down on a piece of paper, it can be very complicated to read through the statute to learn exactly what it is that you're trying to achieve. But the real point there, I think, Mr. Chairman, is that the United States Department of Transportation has told us to do that and has said if you do that in statute, you'll get $200,000 in federal funds to do two things. One, educate people about the need for these seats, and two, help people who maybe not be able to afford a child safety seat to pay for one. So there's sort of two prongs there, an education prong and a support prong to help folks actually acquire what are frequently sometimes as basic as a little block of plastic. Again, just to raise the child's fanny up a few inches. So that's really the basic sum and substance of the bill, and I'll turn it to you now for questions.
Thank you. There's been some, you know, concern expressed about, you know, a high school kid who's lower weight, shorter than average, but a high school kid, and the thought of a high school kid, you know, going to drive in his car with a baby seat or a booster seat, something like that, it's tough to get teenagers to do anything. But could you allay that fear that some teenagers who are smaller than the average teenager is going to be put off by this and either not do it or be terribly embarrassed?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I think some of your members may want to encourage high school students to have to wear booster seats and helmets, but I will allay your fears. If you're more than 4 feet 8 inches tall and weigh more than 80 pounds, you're home free. And so I think that, you know, you're now in the 98% to 99% range of people who were in high school, frankly, people who were in junior high school, as far as height and body weight goes.
Okay. I just, I remember my state. I'm going to call on you, Nancy. Right. I'm going to call on you. That's the easy way, instead of trying to translate.
So that's it. I believe if I'm correct, it's 4 feet 8 inches tall, 80 pounds. You're out of the booster seat range, and you're now just sitting in the car in the seat, just like everybody else does, with a shoulder harness.
And furthermore, Chair Lynn, members of the committee, I would have been one of the children in a booster seat were there not B5 in this bill. And that also exempts children who are over the age of 8. It says that they can use a child restraint device or a seatbelt, whatever is appropriate. Current law says 4 through 16 years, and that's the exact same language as current law has. So it, in that case, basically once a child is 8, regardless of height or weight, then you no longer have the requirement.
I was going to bring in some short, slender people I know for a demonstration, but I was talked out of it. Could I ask my staff, Nancy Manley, to make some comments on this and a couple of questions? Yes.
Over here.
Right. It's how I keep peace in my office. Please identify yourself for the record.
For the record, I'm Nancy Manley, and
Hollis, come on, Becca.
And I work in Representative Lynn's office. Now, the big problem that I had with this bill was that my son is under 80 pounds and 10th grade, and I mentioned to him about, maybe having to use a booster seat, and it's just a big laugh. He's not going to wear a booster seat on this, and there is an exemption says, okay, well, we can waive those. You know, you don't have to do it, but if you don't have to do it, why is it in the bill? So that would be my big question about it.
Yeah, could you respond to that, Senator French?
Sure, and thanks. And this is why, as my staffer, Mr. Motorow, just pointed out, on page 2 of the bill, at line 11, subsection 5, says once you're 8 years of age and you do not exceed the height and weight, you just have to be in a child safety device, and that means essentially a shoulder harness.
Is that a layer concern?
Well, but what I'm saying is that it's why is it even in the bill? And it's, you know, if we saying, okay, we're going to put this in the bill, but if you don't want to do it, you don't have to. Just be in a safety seat. So why don't we just take it out by eliminating the kids 8 to 15 that are under 80 pounds, or, you know, if it's already up to the parents, just take it out of the bill. That was my concern about it.
And she did not know she was going to testify this morning.
I did not.
Thank you very much. That was Nancy Manley. Senator French.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm this is exactly why we should have hearings and get these things out in the air and let folks understand what the bill does. I guess I would probably be better off at this point to turn to the experts in the field. We've got individuals who work in this area, who understand the regs, who are sort of the liaison between the federal government and the state government on this area. And again, I think probably if there are more concerned parents out there, and there should be anytime you have a new law and the possibility of getting ticketed and fined, you should be concerned. The real issue, I think, at the bottom of this bill is to get the $200,000. And it's not to ticket and fine parents. And I understand you shouldn't put laws on the books that don't need to be there. But no one is out to harass children or harass high school kids. We're really just trying to make the state a little bit safer and qualify for some federal.
If we just get some kind of bill, the kids don't harass parents.
Let
me ask some questions from the committee. Before you leave and get the other experts up here. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator French, thanks for testifying. What are the federal requirements? Is this a federal requirement, the 16, or is the money attached to a ceiling and a floor, or what do we have to deal with that? If we drop this out, are we going to lose that money, or just help me with that if you could?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'm probably not the best person to speak to that specific point about how far we can change this bill and still qualify for the federal funds. I think there are people here who, I'd guess, and I might guess wrong.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions from the committee at this point? If not, thank you very much. We'll probably call you back up for a wrap.
Here. Thank you.
Who would like to come forward at this point? Senator French, who would you like to have come forward?
There are either one of these.
Please come forward, sir.
Could Ms. Cashin come up too, please?
Yeah, she can come up. Ms. Cashin, would you like to come up at the same time or not? your choice.
Yeah, I just realized. I'll come up.
If I have to.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Tim Bundy. I'm the Chief of Injury Prevention Emergency Medical Services for the State of Alaska and Public Health, and it's quite a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
With me.
Hi, good morning. I'm Cindy Cash, and I'm the Administrator for the Alaska Highway Safety Office.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bundy, would you like to proceed?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things I'd like to point out
just a little louder, if you would.
Yes. The Department of Health Services, we support the Bill 72 and Child Safety Seats and Seat Bill. This amends Alaska Statute 2805-095B to set specific standards for the use of child passenger restraints. Motor vehicle-related injuries are the leading cause of death in the U.S. of children between the ages of 2 and 14. In Alaska, motor vehicle crashes are the second leading cause of hospitalization of children who are prenatal to 14 years of age, and the leading cause of mortality for children of that are prenatal to 14. In 2006, 7 children were severely injured in motor vehicle crashes, and from 2002 to 2006, 63 children have been injured in the motor vehicle crashes in Alaska per the Alaska Trauma Registry. Children who are restrained in booster seats are 59% less likely to be injured in a crash than children restrained by a lap belt only. Nationally, voluntary seatbelt inspection stations report 80 to 85% of the children are improperly restrained, and one-third of the children under the age of 14 use the wrong type of restraint. According to the Alaska Trauma Registry, greater than 85% of the children hospitalized were improperly restrained with lap belt shoulder harnesses or were not restrained at all. Current statute that references child safety devices is confusing about specific standards for age and weight based restraints. The bill is designed to eliminate the confusion about which restraints are appropriate for each age and weight level. The bill clarifies the type of passenger restraints required by children of various ages and size to prevent and minimize vehicular injuries. Currently, 43 states have passed booster seat legislation qualifying them for U.S. Department of Transportation highway safety grants.
Okay. Any questions? Reverend Renegado.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it was your words that said the existing laws are confusing. So I went to page 2 here and I said, well, let's see, this paragraph is 0 to 1 year, the next paragraph is 1 to 5, the next one's 4 to 8, the next one is 4, the next one's 8 to 16. I'm confused. I don't even know what we're after.
Representative.
We're after safety of kids, and I guess if I can follow that up, I'm confused by this. How many kids will be unhurt because we pass this legislation compared to if we don't pass it?
You probably don't have the direct answer to that. I don't think anybody could, but go ahead.
Representative Gatto, through the chair, I think the purpose of the legislation that's put forth is to clarify what is a proper restraint seat for the children of these areas. We've had children who were literally 1 or 2 years old put in lap belts, and people, and it says for us to properly restrain them in the current law. This will clarify the types of restraints. And restraints that are used, such as child safety seats, are based upon the height and weight of the children that are there, and that's what the design is for. And the way they go into the actual seat themselves, whether it's a very small child and you have to turn the basket around so that it faces a seat versus using a booster seat for children that's a little bit larger. That's what this is there to try to clarify.
Follow up?
Yes. Don't we already do that with rear-facing infant seats? I mean, that's what they are. They're rear-facing.
Representative Gunnell, through the chair, a lot of the seats have been improperly used. People don't see that, and they don't use it that way. In fact, what we do is one of the things in our particular section is we have an expert who's gone out and learned various types of seats, and he goes out and train the trainers throughout the state, and they have seatbelt inspection states, and we find that a lot of parents who come in with their seats don't know how to properly set them in the car, how to properly secure them in the car. And so this has been a real effort by our department in conjunction with Department of Transportation. It's been a very successful effort, and we've actually seen over the years some reduction in child injuries through that. But I think the problem is that the biggest confusion is coming is they don't know what they know they need to restrain a child, but they don't know what law they have to follow or what they have to do, and it wasn't clear prior to that. So we're just kind of trying in statute to clear up that confusion. I wasn't one of those to draft the statute, but I understand the basis of what they're trying to do.
Follow up. Well, you said we've had some reduction, so then you know some statistics.
Yes, sir. Through the chair, we do.
Can you tell me what they are?
Unfortunately, I didn't come prepared to discuss the exact reductions, but we can do that through the Alaska Trauma Registry. we would have to go back and make some inquiries and how that could be, but I can certainly try to get you some information of where it was before and where it is now over a period of time in terms of reductions of child safety. And these stats are looked at, normally they're looked at nationally on basis of fatality, but with the Alaska Trauma Registry, we're able to look at those that are very serious injuries. And the serious injuries that we'd look at would be those that are require actual hospitalization and admission. So I could go back to, say, 1990 and look at this and come back with you for some stats, if that's satisfactory.
Right. Representative Grunberg and then Representative Seaton.
Thank you very much. We've been dealing with Ms. Cashin, sir, and I don't know if who I should address this to. I'm assuming I should address it to her. I'd like a copy of the statutes, regs, and policies that specify exactly what the state law must say. Do you have that with you, ma'am?
I do.
Could we have that distributed to the committee,
yes,
please,
please,
Nancy?
Please give it to my staff. Was that it?
That was it for the first
no,
thing.
I want to come back to it, I guess. Representative,
I want to see exactly what the feds require that we say in state law.
Okay, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
A little louder, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, and I think what Nancy wants is in the bill because of the fact that they're taken out on page 2, lines line 22. They are taking out the age requirement and leaving in the size. So if the child is not yet 16 but is under 80 pounds, they are shall be properly secured in a child safety device approved for a child of that size by the United States Department of Transportation. So to me, that says it doesn't matter how old they are. I know it says 8 years or but less than 16.
Right.
So if they're not 16 yet, they are required to be in a child safety seat if they're not if they're not 80 pounds.
Is that not basically the same thing that my staffer, Nancy Manley, addressing?
For what I understood is that
it's confusing to me.
She felt that it was that she didn't have any say because it wasn't the law. But here, that if we change it, it is the law. Because it doesn't matter how old they are, it just depends on how much they weigh.
Who would like to answer that? Mr. Bundy?
Through the chair, I believe that as we look through the various statutes, there are some qualifiers here. If there a person, a child who's under 16 or...
Mr. Chair, point of clarification. Please cite the statute, sir.
Oh.
Or the page number in the line?
The line that I'm looking at on the proposed.
Oh, you're looking at our bill.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, please let him proceed.
Sorry. As I look as what's on the bill in line 11, where it begins, talks that except as provided, may not transport a child under age 16 in a motor vehicle unless the driver is required a safety device and properly secured each child as in the subsection. And proper securing of the child in that subsection, unless otherwise specified, it's going to be at least a seat belt. So I think that's the first part that we're looking at in terms of restraint. Father goes on to qualify under line 15 that less than 1 year of age, the child 1 year of age or older who weighs less than 20 pounds shall be properly secured in a rear-facing child seat that meet or exceeds the standard of the U.S. Department of Transportation. I think that's a clarification in the existing statute, but I'd have to pull the statute up and look at it. Department of Transportation is used in accordance with manufacturer instructions. If they are 1 or more years of age, but less than 5 years of age, weighs 20 pounds or more, they shall be secured in a child restraint device that meets those standards of the U.S. Department of Transportation in accordance with manufacturer instructions. If they're over 4 years of age, but less than 8, years of age, less than 57 inches in height, this is where it certain come in with the height and booster seats, and weighs 20 pounds or more but less than 80 pounds, they shall be properly secured in a booster seat. So we're dealing now with an age segment of 4 to 8 years of age. If they're over 4 years of age and exceed the height weight requirements, then they need to be secured in a seat belt. And I think that's very clear that they are too big for a booster seat at that point. They need to be at least in a seat belt. And it says for children that are 8 years of age, but less than 16, who do not exceed the height and weight requirements in Section 3, shall be properly restrained in a child safety device approved for that age and size by the Department of Transportation, whichever is appropriate for that particular child. I think if there's anything that might be some confusion there is that paragraph, but what it's basically saying is that if they're under 16 and they're over 8, they still have to be in a seat belt and they have to be restrained.
It doesn't say that.
And that's what, you know, it may be. Is that not what it says?
It's too late for this committee, but should this bill, and I hope it does, make it to the Finance Committee, it might be nice to have some kind of a graphic, you know, showing height and weight gone, so you could see it visually, because it, I think you're explaining it well, but it's still confusing, just, you know, the language of it. And so if you could, and it looks like you may have some kind of a graphic back here. Representative Seaton?
Well, can I follow Thank up?
Oh, I beg your pardon.
I'd like to follow up on that.
Yes, please.
Can you? Where then in the statute does it describe a child safety device?
Are you dealing with? You have the federal CFR there?
Yes.
Yes.
I believe that it's in Anton's law. Through the chair, I believe Representative Wilson that
please move the microphone.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I believe that the description is in Anton's law, which is the second document that I handed to Ms. Manley.
We just got one.
Please.
Well, and the reason,
the chair, Max.
We have another.
May I? The reason I'm asking what a child safety device is because it is saying, and Nancy came over and said to me, her concern was that in federal law, is it right now 65 pounds? Is that the cutoff?
Yes.
Yeah, and she was saying, why not 65 so that the teenagers aren't having to use a child safety device? Because to me, a child safety device is not a seatbelt.
Through the chair.
And you were referring to Nancy Manley for the benefit of the clerks. Please.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, this bill exempts the teenagers. This bill exempts those that are over the age of 8 from having to wear a booster seat. Is that right?
No.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
Well,
if they're between the ages of 8 and 6 and 16, they still have to be required. We're tying them in. It's right, says here, between the ages of 8 and 16.
Give us the page and line number.
Number 5. Between page two, number five, lines 18 through 23. It says 8 years of age, but less than 16 years of age, who do not exceed the height and weight requirements in 3, and if they don't, that means that they are under 4'9" or under 80 pounds. In 3 of this section, they shall be properly secured in a child safety device. So that means a child safety device up to 16 years.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, and it goes on to say, or in a safety belt, whichever is appropriate for that particular child.
Mr. Chair.
On that point, Representative Grunberg.
I am going through, this is the first time I've ever seen the regulation. This is one of the most confusingly drafted statutes I have seen in a long time. And I think that looking at the regs, the federal regs is what we should have done. And I apologize, I should have done this long ago. I'd like the members to look at page 2 of the bottom of page 1, top of page 2 of the regs, pages 5110 and 5111, minimum requirement for a grant. To qualify for a grant under this program, therefore, a state must enact and enforce a law requiring that any child riding in a passenger motor vehicle, i.e. a passenger car, pickup truck, van, minivan, or sport utility vehicle, who is under the age of 8, who was under 8 years of age, be secured in a child restraint. A child restraint includes a child safety seat as defined in 23 U.S.C. 504-5F, a booster and a booster seat as defined in the regs. The state child restraint law must allow law enforcement officials to stop or detain a passenger motor vehicle and issue a citation upon observation that a child under 8 years of age is not properly secured in a child restraint without the need for probable cause or to believe that another violation has been committed. Now, I don't see anything in that that says anything about a child over eight. Where in the regs does it say that?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, on page 5111, and it's a highlighted section, so your copies would show it a slightly darker section. It's right here.
Okay.
Right here. I will read to you. Consistent with the final rule published under Section 3 of Anton's Law, a state law covering children under 8 years of age but excluding children who have attained a weight in excess of 65 pounds will not be deemed ineligible under this grant program. In addition, consistent with longstanding NHTSA guidance on booster seat usage, a state law covering children under 8 years of age but excluding children who have attained a height of 5 feet 9 inches or taller will not be deemed ineligible.
I don't mean to take it, but I don't see anything that talks about children over the age of eight.
That's because there's not a requirement for us to deal with children over the age of eight. According to the DOT Chief Counsel, Alaska's law not only qualifies it for Section 2011 funding, but it enhances its law by containing language that takes care of children over the ages of 18 in a proper way. It congratulated us on this bill.
My question.
I need to get to Representative Seaton, too.
Sir, do you want me to wait?
Well, follow through on that one.
Yeah, because I'm interested in knowing the specific letter of the federal law. And what would the problem we have here is with Section 5, which doesn't deal with children under the age of 8 at all. I don't see any need for Section 5 under the federal law. Can you show me in the federal law where we are required to have Section 5?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, you are correct. This bill goes beyond what the federal requirements have for Section 2011.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I was wanting to know what the differences are between, on page 2, lines 3 and 4, the child safety device meeting the standards of the U.S. Department of Transportation as it currently is, and this change we're making in here. So what are the differences that currently NHTSA, those standards, what are those current standards? Are there any differences between those standards by the Department of Transportation and the language you're proposing in this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, so you're wondering, you're asking if NHTSA standards have changed between our law and this bill?
No, I believe that what you're doing here is just incorporating NHTSA standards.
Through the chair, that is correct.
And this is a little bit of committee discussion, but, when we dealt with this before, we dealt with it and cited the DOT standards so that we would not have to come back and redo them when NHTSA, and they will, they'll change the standards at some point in time and we wouldn't have to create a new law. So that's what our current law says. And apparently the Department of Public Safety cannot interpret or cannot somehow figure out what the national standards are, even though they're on the DOT website. And the purpose for having this whole law here is to come in and parents aren't going to read this. Parents don't go to the statute books and read the statutes. This is solely here so that the police can more easily understand what the statute is, because it's the same statute as we're currently enforcing. These are the DOT standards. There's no change. And I think it's very confusing. We tried to get around it 2 years ago when we passed the law establishing the DOT standards. We do have those standards in force. I don't know why we're not getting the $200,000, because that should have taken care of it. But apparently we have the government saying that they don't want to enforce it. But so my question again is just that what we're putting here, whether it's up to 16 and all of those things, those are the currently required, the standards on line four here, standards of the United States Department of Transportation. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, that is correct.
Okay. So Mr. Chairman, I just want to make sure that we all understand we are not changing anything in the law. This has nothing to do with these regs. The standards are published in the Department of Transportation. And if you go to their website, you'll find all this exact same stuff that we're putting in here. And the only reason we're putting it in here, we're changing our law, is because the Department of Public Safety cannot go to the DOT website and see what is required for them to enforce. And so that.
On that point, sir.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I probably misunderstood you, but I thought you said that Section 5 was totally different from the federal law. And that they were congratulating us because we were putting something in that they didn't have. And I must have misunderstood that. Explain that to me.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, federal regs are requiring states to have laws that only deal with kids up to 65 pounds. Our bill goes beyond that, and it addresses those children who weigh greater than 65 pounds by either saying you need to use a booster seat or a seat belt. And Chief Counsel encourages or supports states that provide a broader definition, that we go beyond 65 pounds. But it's not a requirement.
But what I'm saying then this indeed is not the same as the federal law.
Through the chair, that is correct.
But you just told Representative Seaton that it was.
Point of clarification.
Representative Seaton?
What I'm saying is this is the same as our current law, because our current law
In Alaska
says that we will enforce the standards of the United States Department of Transportation. If you go to the Department of Transportation, they have all of these things, and this is our current law. It's just that for some reason, even though we have the current law adopting the standards, the federal standards, the police departments are having trouble understanding what the Department of Transportation website says. So I just want to clarify it.
I'm sorry, but I've got to understand this, because it shows to me that we are taking out of the current law for a child safety in Section 5, we are taking out of the current law for a child safety device for infants if the child is four, not yet 16 years of age. And we're changing that to say 8 years of age, but not less than 16 years of age, who does not exceed the height and weight requirements of this subsection. And then, so we are changing it.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, our current law requires the use of proper safety devices for children under the age of 16. Our law already does that, but it doesn't include which safety device must be used based on the child's age, height, and weight.
So we are changing our consistent. So this isn't exactly the way it is.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I believe that Representative Seaton is talking about the DOT federal standards. Mm-hmm. And what DOT does is when a booster seat meets its standards, they put a sticker on it. And that tells the enforcement officer if the child is in a DOT-approved booster seat. It's pretty simple.
So you're saying this is all what's in the federal law, and also Section 5 is in the federal law?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, no, I'm not. And I apologize for creating any confusion. This bill provides the the requirements for what types of safety devices for our children based on age, height, and weight.
Okay.
What our current law has is what that our children have to be restrained in a safety device, but it doesn't say what kind. There's gaps in there.
Yes, I know there's gaps in there, but I'm just trying to get you to tell me there are changes in this, so this isn't exactly like the federal law because Section 5 is not in the federal law. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, yes, you are correct.
Thank you.
Do we have to have Section 5 to get the $200,000?
No.
No. I just wanted to clarify that.
But
it'd be nice to have. Okay. Representative Seaton. Excuse me. Representative Johnson, then Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know if you have this chart that has all the states, and it says child must be restrained, and then it's an adult safety belt permissible. Do you have this kind of chance of...
No, not with me. I don't. But I'm familiar.
Well, as I look down here on the states, Alabama, Alaska, and go through them, I don't see any of them that require a child restraint over the age of 8.
Makes sense.
This is what she's talking about.
Do I have that?
Yeah, you should.
See, we're over on the right-hand column, it says adult is permissible 6 through 17. With the age, but I don't see any of them that require anything for a child restraint under the age of 8 or with the age of 8 in any other state in the union.
This is very
confusing. So is that accurate? Do you agree with that?
That's right.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I would agree that this is a summary of the state's laws. I would have to look at each state's laws to read it entirely to be able to say, yes, that is correct.
Representative Wilson?
On that point.
Oh, excuse me.
It does have it over several places. It has
over
it.
8? Where?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just skimmed it very quickly.
In Maine?
There
8
was.
8 through 17. In Nebraska, 6 through 17.
Mr. Chair, if I might, that says.
If you would like to dialogue, that's fine with me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But it says adult safety is permissible in that far right column, Representative Wilson.
Down here it has it.
If you go to the top of the first page, so it's permissible at that age. But the left-hand column is the one I'm looking at where it says must be in a child restraint.
Okay, I see. You're
so right. where there's a child, must be in a child restraint, which I'm assuming is a booster seat or a child seat, no state in the union.
You're right.
Requires anything over the age of 8 with the exception of Alaska if we pass this law. Is that an accurate?
Yeah.
According to this document that I have, is that somewhat accurate? Or I know you'd have to go back and look at it, but according to this, is that not what this says?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I believe you are correct. That would be accurate based on this document.
But again, I want to get through, in my mind, we don't need the Section 5 to qualify with $200,000. And where did Section 5 originate from?
Chairman Lynn, you are correct, and you would need to ask Senator French's office that question.
Okay. Any other questions for these two fine folks? Okay. Representative Seaton had a question. He left the room right now. When he comes back, I may have him put him in line there to ask the question. Please, we need you here. Please stay here. I want to... proceed, though. Senator French would like to respond to any of the conversation you've heard here? Please come up. But before you do, Representative Seaton has just come back into the room with his question. You're in line.
Mr. Chairman, I was just getting the DOT standards brought to us, so we would have the comparison. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Senator French. Would you shed some light on this? I'm a little slow in the uptake on some of this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Everybody else is fine, but I'm not.
And
please. Go ahead.
We appreciate the dialogue. As my staff and I sat and looked at subsection 5 with the, perhaps idea in mind that it could be jettisoned, my staffer jotted down some notes. I'll let him read them to you because I think it's helps you understand, helps the committee understand why subsection 5 is still necessary. So,
okay,
Mr. Motorow.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, again, Andy Motorow, staff to Senator French. And looking through B5, you can look at the language being pulled out, and it relates to children between the ages of 4 and 16. So just by putting in language that specifies what type of restraint is necessary between the ages of 0 through 8, we're dabbling in the statute from 0 to 16. And when you look at B5, it clarifies, in essence, that a passenger must be restrained in some sort of way if they are below the height and weight requirements in subsection 3, and they must be restrained either by a safety device or a seatbelt. And so what it's doing is it's, I think, confirming that some sort of restraint must be used. In some ways, if we got rid of it altogether, I'm sure the primary seatbelt law would probably still apply. But then it might be unclear whether or not a booster or a child seat could be used for a parent who wants that added protection for their child. So by jettisoning B5, I would be worried that we'd be losing that.
Reverend Greenberg.
I think part of this is a drafting problem. And I've spent a lot of time on this bill, and so has Allison of my staff. And the way, when we were talking about jettisoning Section 5, we're talking about striking the current language in Section 5. Otherwise, it would be totally inconsistent. So we'd have to, put in brackets all of the current Section 5. Part of the problem is that the bill drafter, Mr. Lockup, said to me he was reading Section 4 as between 4 and 8 years of age, but that's not how it reads. If you were to simply delete all the current language in the current law that's not even bracketed in Section 5, just leave that out, I think you'd achieve the result these folks are talking about. But if you take a look at the regs themselves, it seems to me that they're slightly confusing because, and if we really want to get the federal money, that's what we want to do, is deal with these regs.
The first thing we want to do is protect the safety of kids.
Well, of course.
Then money.
Yeah, I'm assuming the kids are protected.
They must not be, or we wouldn't be doing all this.
Well, I'm not so sure about that, Mr. Chair. The language I read before describes some stuff, but if you take a look at the real thing that has to be filled out to get the money, it's on page 5112. Do you folks have the reg?
We do, thank you.
Okay, and what it says is it references not Anton's law, but it references Safety Lou, several sections in Safety Lou, and some regulations. And I'm wondering, since those are the things that have to be certified, that we're enforcing child restraint laws that conform to these requirements, which we don't even have in front of us, if either the senator or his staff or Ms. Cash can tell us what those statutes say, those statutes we don't and regs that we don't have.
Representative Greenberg, through the chair, it's a good question. We, in all the versions of this bill that's gone through, we've been working with Cindy Cashin's office for this reason. We don't have those exact, as you mentioned, that exact language in front of us, but federal counsel has gone over and certified that each draft does fulfill the needs for the federal grant and also per their standards. I can't speak to those standards in particular. I don't know if Ms. Cashin can, but
Could we ask Ms. Cashin?
Senator French?
Thanks. And if I could just chime in, I think some of the debate we're having here today about subsection 5 has come about because we've not focused on the large or that's in line 22. The or really cures most of the problems because the or says, or you can be in a safety belt, whichever is appropriate.
Which seems rather simple.
That's the idea. It's trying to capture, in language, the idea that there are some kids that are old, right? They're 8 years of age. Maybe their size and weight isn't exactly fit them into the neat little categories that everybody else fits into. So the statute says, well, you can put them in a booster seat, or you can put them in a safety or a seat belt.
Either or.
Whichever you think is appropriate.
And it's
trying to cure up, I think, a little bit of confusion with respect to the previous categories that have been fairly rigid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm a little confused because I thought that we're defining in here what's appropriate for a kid under 4 feet or 57 inches and what's appropriate for anyone under 16 years of age that is under 80 pounds. So it seems like we're putting in a caveat that says, you know, but if you're under 80 pounds, you're in violation of the other because it's not going to be the appropriate device. So I'm not sure.
I'm sure everyone does.
Do you see a dichotomy there or something when we say you can do this if it's appropriate, and then just before that we define by age and height what's appropriate? So are we putting parents in a catch-22 in this, or are we putting the police? The police are the ones that are coming to us, I think, and saying this doesn't, the national standards don't work because we don't know how to interpret their guidance, and so I'm trying to figure out whether what would the police do if they find somebody that's, you know, 65 pounds in there and just has a seatbelt on, can they now say, oh well, seatbelt's okay, it's an appropriate restraint device?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, the point you're making, I think, is the point that Ms. Manley was making. And that's why subsection 5 is there. Once kids get to be 8 years of age or older, they become a little more difficult. And what the subsection 5 says is that, look, we're going to put it in your hands. If you think your child needs to be in a booster, a thin little nine-year-old needs to be in a booster seat, put them in a booster seat. If your thin little nine-year-old throws an absolute fit every time you get that child near a booster seat, put them in a seat belt, whichever is appropriate.
Follow-up?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. So I guess I was misreading this. I thought this was for enforcement of these laws, and so it would be the police that would be deciding whether this was an appropriate restraint or not. So what you're talking about is whichever is appropriate in the parent's view. Is that what we have?
I'm gonna turn to my staff.
Okay, and my question is just that I don't see us in this law directing that it's the parent's view of appropriateness. Mm-hmm. I think it's the enforcement view of appropriateness, and if we want to make it so that if it's over 8 years, the parent can choose what's appropriate, mm-hmm. I think we need to state in there so we don't have people getting citations for following what they think is the law. Mm-hmm.
And Rep. Seaton, through the chair, that's a great question. I think what we're dealing with here is a bill that deals with height, weight, and then age as well. And so when they start lining up, there's some difficulty. I think what answers that question best is what the current statute reads. And the current statute basically reads like subsection 5, minus the language saying height and weight of subsection 3. But it's saying whichever is appropriate. So currently on the books is a law that we must follow the safety standards for children between the ages of 4 and 16. And you don't have, you know, I was below 4'9", well past 8. You know, I'm surprised I ever made it over that height. And for that reason, you know, I wasn't cited when my parents were driving me around. I don't think we see the police doing that now. But in essence, it doesn't change that standard. The bill doesn't. It just changes from 4 to 16. The range is 8 to 16.
You know, what I'd like to do here soon, I'd like to get the public testimony. We have quite a few to testify, and then take a listen to what these folks have to share with us, and then come back to the committee discussion. I'm going to please be available. You might have to answer some questions. I'm online. Is Jane Feldman and Soldatna available?
Yes, this is Jane Feldman.
Yes, good morning, ma'am. Would you please identify yourself and your affiliation?
My name is Jane Selman. I'm the coordinator of the Safe Kids Coalition here on the Kenai Peninsula.
Good morning.
Good morning. I've been a child passenger safety technician since 1998, and I'm currently a child passenger safety instructor. So I deal with child passenger safety on a day-to-day basis. And it is very confusing. And I'd just like to say, first of all, I appreciate you all being so diligent about trying to get this right. I want to first give a little bit of a background. And we've been dealing with this issue of what our state law is, and we've always had the law that said whichever is appropriate. But it has fallen out of the realm of the federal NHTSA and the guidelines saying that we qualify as having quote-unquote a booster seat law. That's why we've gone through all of this concern about updating and clarifying our current law, because we fell out of the fact that we didn't have the language that was correct for our booster seat legislation, saying that we in Alaska had that. Now, in 2003, Senator Seaton looked into this issue for us, and he actually was able to find out. We pulled it up. Was able to find out that yes, it looked like we were protecting our kids according to law, but then we tried to work with that for a year or 2 years. We still were not recognized as having a booster seat legislation. So therefore, we have been since then trying to clarify that and get the wording so that we do qualify. yes, we're not all the same size and shape. It's very hard to put this law into black and white, because there's always going to be something that's going to fall out. But basically, in my job, my responsibility is to educate the public as to the safest practice. And yes, I do talk about the law. The law is very important for what we're doing to keep kids safe, because there's a certain group of the population that will do the safest thing for their children, whether it's the law or not the law. But then there's another group of the population that they look at the law for their guidance. Now, so this is what they discussed earlier, that this is to fill the gap. We have a major gap of children, especially over the age of 4 to the age of 8 and sometimes 10, that are riding in their vehicles unsafely. And so our concern is to get them in these in booster seats. Like they say, it's a very simple process. Put them in a booster seat. That adult seat belt then fits correctly, secures that child. We know that one of my children was 10 years old, and he was still riding in a booster seat periodically because of the fact that he didn't fit in one of our vehicles with the shoulder lap belt fitting him properly, but in another one of our vehicles he did sit correctly. And then depending on how long of a drive it was, whether he squirmed around, if he squirmed around, that belt then went up onto his abdomen, and he was at risk of having major abdominal injuries and spinal injuries. So there's a lot of education that has to go into this this whole process. And booster seats and booster seat legislation, I think that we owe it to our children, we owe it to the state of Alaska to do the best we can to get children into these seats. And that's why I think this legislation is very critical. as for teenagers, that's a whole nother ball game. That's another fear of mine, and the fact that yes, we're probably not getting these kids into booster seats, but we need to be looking at, are they wearing their seat belts correctly? If they really are small, what kind of a vehicle are they driving? Many newer, you know, it's a changing industry with motor vehicles. And many of the manufacturers are making items for smaller people. I mean, I have several friends who are barely 5 foot. And yes, I've seen adults in booster seats. So the thing of it is that that's a whole nother area. But if we delete the section that 5 and don't address the ages between 8 and 16, we're creating a whole new gap. of children that aren't going to be protected.
Could you wrap it up? If you could, I've got about eight other people who need to testify, and hopefully we can move the bill today.
Okay. I just encourage you to support this bill. It will save lives, and there are a lot of gray areas, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your concern. I wonder how many small children are driving Hummers. Do we have, I'm going to Chugiak now, Margaret Hayashi.
Yes, I'm here. This is Margaret Hayashi.
Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for hearing this bill today.
If you give us about 2-3 minutes, we'd appreciate it. You could tell us whom you're representing.
I've been an emergency nurse for 43 years, and I've also seen, you know, the trauma that is related to improper use of child restraint seats. As a child passenger safety instructor in this state, I've checked hundreds, literally, of seats, and we've checked thousands of seats statewide since this program began in 1997. The reason that we've moved to do this is because there is a misunderstanding of our current law. Policemen, not only policemen, but families. And the law, or the clarification that you see before you today, has actually been vetted by several parents that we asked their opinion of it. What we've done is, in each category, we have addressed what is necessary to restrain a child properly. And our current law does not do that. It says whichever is appropriate according to DOT standards. Well, unfortunately, nobody ever goes back and looks at DOT standards. So therefore, they put their kids, after 4 years of age, in seatbelts. We have a huge drop-off of children not entering into booster seats after 4 years of age, between 4 and 8, or 4 years of age and 80 to 100 pounds. Because manufacturers have long told us, manufacturers of cars, that people, individuals, children, these seats and lap shoulder belt configurations were not made for children or adults under 4'9". What happens is the children take the top portion of the harness, put it behind them, and they're restrained only by a lap belt, which has been disastrous in crashes. And I've seen the results of that in emergency rooms over the years. So what this law does, and what we've been trying to do for the last 3.5, almost 4 years, because of parents' misunderstanding, and trust me, we went from 90% misuse, and we're about 85% misuse now when we're checking seats. But what we're doing now is trying to specifically in each category clarify what needs to be done for a child. And if a 9-year-old is not yet 80 pounds, because we do have a lot of special children in the world, then car seats now go up to 100 pounds, because it is the safest way for children to travel. And so, what we're trying to do is not confuse you, but trust me, as parents and as grandparents, if you deal with this on a day-to-day basis, you actually can read and understand what this says. Because, as I say, we've vetted it through many, many parents at this time, as well as elderly grandparents, of which I happen to be one.
And you're talking to another elderly grandparent.
Yes.
A grandparent of 19.
I really appreciate you hearing this. This is really vital. I have three instances in the last 2 years in which children, one survived because they were in a booster seat, two did not, and they were 7 and 8 years old. And two of the children died as a result of a catastrophic crash not being restrained properly.
Thank you very much. I really want to thank you. You've given us some valuable information.
And I want to thank you very much. And really, I encourage you to pass this. This is very important.
We'll be able to pass this maybe if we can hear everybody and get to a vote at some point.
I'm finished.
Thank you
very much.
Mr. Wallace, are you there in Chugiak?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Good morning, sir. Please help us. Limit your remarks to about 2 minutes. I know he has valuable information, but we need to move through here.
I will keep my remarks short and succinct. My name is Dave Wallace. I'm here for two reasons. First, I'm a paramedic with the Anchorage Fire Department. Part of my duties also as a child passenger safety technician instructor. But secondly, I'm here as a parent. As Ms. Spellman indicated, she had a child that was well over the age of 8 but still riding in a booster. I have a 6-year-old who is now reaching the height requirements but still well under the weight limit. And we've encouraged the booster seat use because it is still the most appropriate way for her to be restrained within the backseat of the vehicle. This legislation is not only important for law enforcement, but it's important for the education of parents. Parents do look to the law for providing them with guidance on how to best take care of their children. I don't believe there's a parent who wakes up in the morning and tries to figure out how they can hurt their child, but they do need guidance on what is the best practice. This legislation, what it allows is a defined criteria for each different age group so that parents have a way of ensuring that when they leave their driveway, their child is as safely restrained as possible. I do encourage you to pass this legislation. I believe it is important for the safety of the children of Alaska, and I do appreciate your time this morning.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the brevity of your remarks. I think you made some very, very touching ones. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I hope I pronounced this correctly. Is Arlene Petuk from Anchorage?
Hi. My name is Arlene Petuk. I'm the discharge care coordinator for pediatrics at the Alaska Native Medical Center.
Thank you.
And I have, thank you very much for looking at this bill. I am an RN, a child passenger safety technician for 10 years now. And I have 3 points to make. First of all, parents are confused when they read the bill. When they take the time to read it, their belief is between 4 and 8, the child can be in a lap shoulder belt.
I think we're confused in the committee a little bit, too. So
I think so, too.
And so you're in good company.
Is that there is a reason why the child needs to be in a booster seat, and I don't think that's been addressed. When you put a 4-year-old in a lap shoulder belt, the lap portion of the belt sits above the hip bones, unlike in an adult. And in an accident, the first strong point in the body that lap belt hits is the spine. So you're looking at massive internal injuries and spinal injuries on a child. And my third point is, as a discharge planner, I have had the opportunity to discharge kids with complex medical conditions. The $200,000 that we're looking at to gain as a result of this bill is a drop in the bucket for the cost that these children with spinal injuries are going to incur, or head injuries. Thousands of dollars a month are spent on complex children to get them to the home situation. And the massive impact on the family and the community. So please, this bill will give parents clarity. It will prevent me from discharging complex kids as a result of car seat injuries. So I thank you very much for considering it, and I implore you to please pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I really do appreciate that. We're going off net now to Jill Hodges. Jill, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I was turning it off mute. Thank you.
And if you limit your remarks to about 2 minutes, I would appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely. My name is Jill Hodges. I'm with the Alaska Brain Injury Network, and I've appreciated your time on this Saturday morning and the comments from other Alaskans. And basically, I mean, we aren't all the same size and shape, and one thing that we do have in common is that we all have a brain, and a brain that controls our personality and our behaviors and our reactions. And the CDC, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, states that traumatic brain injury is the leading cause of death and disability among children and youth. And the Brain Injury Network has done presentations to many of you, and many have asked, what can we do to help decrease the numbers of traumatic brain injuries and basically the challenges that take place after brain injury? And passing Senate Bill 72 today is one of those things that you can do. So thank you very much, and I will stop there.
Thank you very much. Really do appreciate that. Thank you for coming in on a Saturday morning. Mr. Glazier, Gordon Glazier, are you there, sir?
Oh, this weekend?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I appreciate it. My name is Gordon Glazier. I'm with the Booster Seat Task Force. I work for the State of Alaska Division of Public Health, Injury Prevention, Emergency Medical Services. I also am involved in child passenger safety training. I just want to echo the words that said before me and just quite quickly to say that the question was asked, is there any data to indicate that passing such legislation actually has an impact? And there was some research done by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia indicating that those states that had passed legislation had an increased use of child restraints, increased from 21% to 75% from ages for children ages 4 to 5 years old, and had a substantial impact in terms of decline. Well, we can't make a definitive number of how many people would be saved because, you know, all legislation doesn't necessarily mean that people will comply. It just increases compliance. One is struck that of the 48-year-olds, the 39 who were injured in Alaska over a five-year period, 15 were in safety belt harnesses, 9 were in lap belt only, 11 were unrestrained, and they were not, and none of them were in boosters or in car seats. The reality of it is that this is legislation will have a direct impact, not in terms of medical costs, but preventing childhood injuries. As well as securing some federal funds. In terms of the last Section 5, which has been discussed, additional legislation does is help clarify, because when we talk about appropriate, it's very difficult for someone to have a measure. By adding in, they're saying weight and height, it gives some measure, at least for the parent or the police officer or the judge, some clarification. I have to say, you know, we've tried other alternatives. Representative Seaton was very good about getting a ruling from the Attorney General to try to encourage compliance. It was sent to all the police chiefs. It was, unfortunately, without the clarifying legislation that you have before you, it was just not something that the police officers were, could enforce, nor parents could easily understand.
Right, and Representative Seaton may have an amendment coming forward that will help some of that. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks. I'd be happy to respond to any questions. And again, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Janice Tower, about 2 minutes, please.
Hi, this is Janice Tower.
Good morning.
I am the executive director of the Alaska chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and I would like to lend our chapter support for SB 72. Results from the 2007 national survey of the use of booster seats conducted by the National Center for Statistics and Analysis of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration revealed alarmingly that booster seat use rates for children ages 6 and 7 dropped from 36% in 2006 to 25% in 2007. The study concluded that there is a premature graduation of children from birth to age 12 to restraint types that are inappropriate for their height and weight. We feel that the legislation would help improve the use of booster seat, alleviate a lot of confusion, and I believe that pediatricians are very committed to doing their part by counseling parents during doctor's visits. So again, I'd like to support SB 72, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. I really do appreciate that. Judy, is it Duto, or am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, this is Jody Budo. I'm a pediatrician in Anchorage and president of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and I appreciate our executive director speaking also. The American Academy of Pediatrics has a policy and actually has guidelines that were developed in cooperation with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration in order to fully spell out who needs to be in what size seat and how should they be restrained, and in terms of booster or 5-point harness, and it really is to the benefit of our children to restrain them properly on our roads, especially in the wintertime when driving can be a little bit of a challenge here in Alaska. So the American Academy of Pediatrics fully supports the bill and the clarification of the language so that everybody understands how important it is to restrain Alaska's children.
I want to thank you very much. I appreciate that. You know, I have a large family, and pediatrics really helped our family. Thank you so much. And is there anybody else online to testify? I'm getting a no. Anybody else in the audience testify other than those who've already testified? Would you come forward, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin. I come to you today as a concerned parent. I'd like to make it clear. I'd like to make it clear that I come to you in only that capacity. I followed this bill for quite some time, and I have a number of questions about it and concerns. I guess I just feel that someone needs to speak out and with that concern, because no one has. So far through the process, it seems like many of the committees have just glazed over this bill, and I'm very grateful that you've spent the time this morning to dive into some of these policy issues. First of all, this seatbelt bill is very similar to one that you might recall from 2006 that was narrowly passed. It involved mandatory seatbelt usage in a primary offense and make it stoppable if you don't use one. Similar circumstance of some federal money being involved, where there's essentially a carrot being waved in front of our face by the feds that if we do this, then we get that money. The rub for me, and I think for parents, is that there's both a height requirement and a weight requirement. I ask this question: what is the purpose of a booster seat? Does a booster seat make you heavier, or does it make you taller? I contend, Mr. Chairman, that it makes you taller. And if you refer to the regs and the Anton's Law, nowhere in the literature does it require that you be a certain minimum weight to lawfully or safely transition to a standard seatbelt. And so if we're going to pass this bill, and before it gets to finance, because I could spend some time on the fiscal note too, I beg you to consider an amendment that would, first of all, reduce that weight level of 80 pounds, because that's nowhere on the books either. The biggest weight I've seen referenced is a 65-pound limit. And then secondly, to just strike that Section 5, because if we have Section 4, it reads that a child over the age of 4 and exceeding these weight and these height requirements, then they'll be in a seatbelt. I think that logically covers all the bases. Couple of other points. If indeed there are a concern over some loopholes or gaps, the safeguard here has been mentioned, and I appreciate, you know, all due respect for the sponsor and the administrators that are involved in this. There is an existing gap. If indeed we have on the books currently that whatever is appropriate for the parent to decide. I mean, if we're trying to set the law up such that we can get these grant monies, there's already a loophole in existence, and we're not changing that loophole. So it seems to me that we continue to set ourselves up for being denied those funds. As a side note, this law was passed in 2002 with $5 million at the federal level for four fiscal years. So at the risk of getting into the fiscal note, I'm wondering if the money is really still there. If so, why are we changing the law? If indeed there's an opt-out, there's a gap, and more importantly, if indeed there's a gap, a choice, then why mandate it? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. And we have a couple of amendments that address some of these issues, which we're not ready to discuss yet. We'll be discussing those in just a few minutes, I hope. That might address some of that. Please remain available to it if you have the time. Is anybody out in the audience who'd like to testify? I'm going to close public testimony. Some folks may come back at invitation of the chair. I have, before we go to complete committee discussion, I have two amendments. I'm going to take them in the order that I received them here. So that I have an amendment from Representative Seaton. Would you move that, please?
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
Because the amendment that I've offered deletes the amendment that we're going to take up here, I'm wondering if it would be appropriate to do them in reverse.
So, Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, if we get into the position where we can discuss this amendment, because I think that cures the section without, I mean, I want to be able to discuss this issue.
Okay, and that's appropriate.
Yeah, and I just took them. I took the coward's way out as the chair and going to the amendment that I received first in my hand. Representative Seaton, would you care to move that amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move conceptual amendment number one, which is on inserting on page 2, line 23, after the final word child there, as determined by the driver.
Is there an objection for discussion?
Objection.
Do we have an opinion to get an objection for discussion purposes? Resident of Seaton, please speak to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is to make a clarification and...
Stand by. Yeah. I didn't. Representative Peterson, please continue.
Thank you. Just for clarification, that this is the driver of the vehicle that would make the determination as what's appropriate for those children under 16. That my understanding is that's what is in the law. However, it's not explicit, and this would clarify that it's not the police officer stopping someone that's going to determine whether it was appropriate or not, but the driver gets to make that determination.
Any discussion on that amendment?
16.
Yeah. And before I go to, and did you discuss this with the sponsor of the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I did, and the sponsor was agreeable.
Okay. Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My only question is, if we allow this to be determined by the driver and they are pulled over by a law enforcement officer and the child is improperly restrained, then what can the officer do? I mean, the reason we're working on this bill is for public safety, and if the parent is given all the responsibility, or the driver of the car given all the responsibility, then the law enforcement officer has basically nothing that they can do. Is that correct? Or
yeah. Thank parental you. Responsibility. What a concept.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, where this is going, the only thing it would do is make this determination of which is appropriate for these for a kid, whether they are going to be in the child restraint or they're going to be in a seat belt. It would not eliminate them from the requirement to have them secured in the seat. But if it's what we're talking about is this category under a certain weight, as to who makes that determination, and it's not clear in the statute. My understanding is that enforcement right now allows the driver to make that determination, but if we don't have it clear in the statute, we may have another officer that makes the determination on their own, and we're this just is a clarifying amendment to make sure that everybody understands.
Okay.
Do you remove your objection?
I remove my objection.
Okay. Without further objection, amendment number 1 passes. Representative Johnson, do you have an amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move amendment number 2.
Any objection?
And I think that is the one that's 26LS037-6/B.
And, Mr. Chairman, I would object for discussion.
Okay. Representative Seaton?
Yeah. I object, and what I'd like to do is... I think we have two questions here. I'd like to divide the question, or have the sponsor divide the question.
Mr. Chairman, I have no problem with that.
Okay, so we're going to make the line 2, line 11, as conceptual amendment number 2, and then make page 2, line 18 to 23, conceptual amendment number 3. Would that be satisfactory?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure it needs to be conceptual.
Okay, well, just leave it non-conceptual then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page.
So it will be amendment 2 and amendment 3, correct?
That's correct.
So you've moved amendment 2, and I'll make an amendment to the amendment to make that amendment 2, just page 2, line 11.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you like for me to speak to that amendment?
Yes, please.
Mr. Chairman, what this does is it takes the weight from 80 to 65, which brings us into concurrence with every other state in the union, brings us into compliance with what I've seen so far as being the federal regulations, and I appreciate the accolades of the Department of Transportation and the federal bureaucrats for giving us accolades for being above that, but I think that this is would eliminate a lot of the problems in terms of weight, height. It would address the testimony of a concerned parent here this morning, and it just brings us into compliance with everything and still allows us to have the money, but takes us to a more reasonable standard.
Okay. I'd like to ask the sponsor of the bill and his assistant, would you care to come forward and give your comment on this? Identify yourself, please.
Thank you. Again, Hollis French, representing State Senate District M. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to this. I do, and I wanted to say I really appreciate the thoughtful discussion we've had today on this important topic. My concern is that by making a change on the fly here, after having heard from EMS responders, from pediatricians, from people who work in the field as a profession, that concerns me. I totally understand the emotions, really, that seatbelt laws can raise in parents and others, and I respect that. But my concern is that by our suddenly making change without having some sort of detailed analysis, it's something that I would not do. It's not a step that I would take. But I, you know, I'm in the hands of your committee, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, you know, I understand that, and I thank you for that, but still, it's your bill, and I'd like to have your input on it. Did you have a...
Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that, and I think all the testimony we heard was about under 8. All the statistics we heard was surveys under 8, and as we look through the 50 states in the union, we don't see anything over 60 pounds for infants. I see 20 to 40 in Alabama, 20 to 40 in Colorado, 60 in Connecticut, 66 in Delaware. Nowhere do I see anything over, height is the only requirement in many of them. When there is weight, none of them are above 60 pounds. So I think all of the studies that we heard testified from, since there are no laws that really cover this, I think all the studies and all the testimony that we may have heard from may only be dealing with those states and those areas where we're dealing with children under the age or under the weight of 65 pounds.
Okay.
I appreciate the making the amendment on the fly, but Mr. Chairman, that's what we do.
Yeah, that's right. Would you somebody care to respond to that, and we go to committee discussion then?
I think the you know, my reluctance is just based on the sort of the bank of and the widespread experience of people in this kind of.
Yes. Representative Grunberg?
Two things. First of all, I'd like the members to look at North Carolina, which says 80 pounds, and North Dakota says 80 pounds. And those are just a couple that I've seen. I would like to hear from Ms. Cashin on this amendment, if we could, Mr. Chair. Could you
yes, we
up?
Could. And then we're going to go to either move the objection or go to a vote. Because we must press on here.
Mr. Chairman, I would also like to point out, if I could, that where he's pointing out, there's also an age limit of 7 and 6.
Okay. And Wisconsin, 16. I think, also.
Okay. Cool. Ms. Cashin.
For the record, I'm Cindy Cashin. I'm the administrator for the Alaska Highway Safety Office. We are responsible for administering these federal funds to programs based on the requirements of NHTSA.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Just the question of 80 versus 65, please.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, the federal requirements to qualify for Section 2011 is for 65 pounds. The recommendations of the Pediatric Association, CDC, all the health and social services are for greater than that. Their recommendations, this is a requirement.
Okay, thank you. Do you maintain your objection? Who objected to that?
Well, I'll object if nobody else did.
I did, but I'd remove it.
You move any further objection to
yes.
The amendment?
I would continue to object.
Okay.
I would.
Representative Wilson, and I want to go to a vote here on the amendment.
Well, I'd like to amend the amendment.
Go ahead.
I'd like to amend the amendment to say 70 pounds. Instead of 65.
I'll object.
Okay. There. And an objection to amending to 70.
Object.
Okay. Speak to your objection quickly, please.
I'm just trying to move on with the standard written statutes and whatnot and 65 and the federal statutes and not try to make this into a casino.
Okay. We have an objection to the amendment. To the amendment. Maintain the objection?
Yes.
Okay. Take the roll call, please. And this was to delete 80 pounds and insert 70 pounds.
No,
is that correct?
No.
It's
not.
No. Delete 65 and put 70.
The amendment.
Okay, so delete.
That's what he
65
said.
And change that to 70, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, take the roll call, please.
Okay, amendment two as amended, Representative Peterson.
No.
Representative Seaton.
No.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Gatto.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Gruenberg.
Yes.
Chair Lynn.
No.
2 yay, 5 nay.
Okay. Now let's go to the amendment itself. Do you maintain the objection? Would you take the roll, please?
Who's maintaining objection, please?
Yeah, who had the objection? I believe we're representing Gruenberg there. He does now, anyway. Take the roll.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Gruenberg.
No.
Representative Peterson.
No.
Chair Lynn.
No.
I don't.
Hold on.
Void the roll.
I was deleted from that roll call.
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Okay, no, void the roll. Okay, start over again, please.
Or do I get 2 votes?
He gets 2 votes now because you deleted before.
He's got an absentee.
Yeah. The question is whether you're 80 pounds or more.
What's that? Okay. Do the roll again, please.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Gatto.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Gruenberg.
No.
Representative Peterson.
No.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Chair Lynn.
No.
3 yay, 4 nay.
Okay. Now, resolution 2 has failed to pass. Excuse me, amendment 2 has failed to pass. We now have amendment 3 before us. Do we need to move? I just need to move amendment 3.
I'll move amendment 3.
Amendment 3.
I'll object.
And objection? Any discussion?
Yes, sir.
Representative Wilson?
There was a lot of discussion going on. I did try to decipher what we're really saying here. Mm-hmm. And so I will just try to keep it on to Section 5. However, I would like to go up to Section 4 to explain what my comments are.
Go ahead.
Section 5. Okay. Section 4 talks about anyone over the anyone age 5 or more, when they exceed both the height and weight, they can wear a seatbelt. Section 5, however, says anyone age 8 through 15 who do not exceed both the height and weight can use a child safety device or a belt, safety belt. That makes more sense to me now than it did before. However, I feel that if we would have changed the weight to like 70, then I would feel a lot more comfortable with this part in, to keep this part in. But at 80 pounds, I feel that's just too much. And also, I feel that the age is wrong. I think that we should not go up to including 8 through 15. I think that we should be keeping it like at least high schoolers. So like 13 should be our cutoff, I think. And so I think there's ways to fix this without getting rid of it totally. And I think the problem is that we're clear up into teenagers, and that's just not going to fly. And we could do it 8 through 13 or something like that, but not through 15. So those are my comments on that.
Okay, any comment? More comments? Reverend Seaton and then Reverend Johnson, and then we're going to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Max, we got a clock here. I'll let you do it. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that we need to be cognizant that what we would be doing is we eliminate five would be lowering our current seatbelt standards. Our current seatbelt standards are those, the standards published under the U.S. DOT. Unfortunately, we don't have them here, but we, but those standards do go up to 16. And I think that, you know, what we're talking about is someone that is tall, could be 60 inches, 65 inches tall, but very slimly built. This, I think, with the addition that it's clarified that the driver gets to make the determination if they're 15, I think that that gets us to where we can be. I also would have liked to seen a little less on the weight, but I think that this will take care of the circumstances that we need to take care of, and so I won't support amendment
Number 3. Johnson, would you either wait and do the wrap up?
I'll do the wrap up, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Grunberg?
Just a question for Representative Johnson, since I am slightly confused at this point. If Amendment 3 passes, what would the law say? Are you intending to leave the law as it is currently before the bill? Or are you going to just eliminate everything that's in the current law?
It would be my intention to leave the law like it is.
Representative Johnson, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It would be my intention to leave the law the way it is and delete only the section of this bill.
So it would say...
Representative Grunberg.
Would there be a subsection 5 that would say, quote, for a child safety device for infants, period, if the child is 4 but... not yet 16 years of age, the child shall be properly secured in a child safety device approved for a child of that age and size by the Department of Transportation, blah, 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 because that really doesn't read with the rest of the bill.
As deemed by the parent, Mr. Yeah. Chairman.
I don't know that that meshes with the rest of the bill.
I would implore the committee, let's get a little bit back to basic committee procedures. I would appreciate it.
Through the chair?
Yes, thank you.
To Representative Johnson, through the chair. Sorry, Mr. Chair. I don't think that that meshes with the rest of the bill.
Okay. I'm going to go to Representative Johnson and comment and wrap up so we can take a vote on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I see where this is going. My concern is not with anyone under the age of 8. I think that is prudent, and that's what we should be doing. But it's that person that may be under 80 pounds that is 15 years old that concerns me. I think having them pulled over as deemed by the parent or the driver, I think is what the actual amendment was, goes a long way to satisfy what I want to do. And I would like to make this a conceptual amendment with the chair's permission. But I think that I would like to go ahead and have a vote on it, because I think it's important to be on the record that at least my concern is that we're telling people under 8, there is no discussion that should be under the law, but between that age of up to 15, I've got real concerns about being pulled over. With the driver does give me a lot of comfort, though.
Okay.
Now, a question on that, please, Mr. Chair.
Quickly.
So the amendment would read, 8 years of age, but less than 16 years of age, who does not exceed. Do you want to leave the who does not exceed language in or not?
No, just a minute.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to make this. Mr. Chairman, I'll make this simple.
We're going to go with the amendment as we have written down here. Otherwise, we're going to have amendments on top of amendments. And so, let's go with what we have. Let the record show this is in fact a conceptual amendment. So we can work this out in the conceptual form. And please make a comment. Then we're going to move on.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with Representative. The rare agreement with Representative Grunberg, and I will withdraw this amendment in light of the driver amendment that we adopted earlier. I think it makes my a little bit moot, but I am concerned
and
about the 16.
I would encourage folks, maybe Senator French, to consider this as it moves on to the next committee, I hope. So Amendment number 3 has been withdrawn. We're back to SB 72 now. And at any further discussion, if not, I would like to a motion to move the bill. Representative Peterson, and then, no, I think you were Who was first?
I think he was.
Okay, Representative Peterson and then Representative Wilson. Then we need to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we've been discussing the nuts and bolts and ages and weights here for a long time, I think something we haven't yet discussed is how are we going to get the word out to the parents? How are we going to advertise the change in the law? We need to think about practicality. People have very busy lives with several jobs that they're doing, and what's the plan to implement this law and to get the word out to
the citizens? Well, I don't want to speak for the sponsor of the bill, but I will. I think the public Department of Public Safety, all this public, just like any other bill that goes through the legislature, how do you get the word out to the public? And I think the same we do every other bill that we pass here. Representative Wilson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to make a comment that we haven't discussed before. And first of all, I'm not sure about how old you are. What is the youngest age that you can get a driver's permit? 14, that's what I thought. Well, when you're a 14-year-old, you might be in the driver's seat, and you might be the driver. Mm-hmm. So at that point in time, the driver is the child that's too short, maybe, or whatever. So because of that, because 14-year-olds can have a driver's permit, I will move amendment number 4, which is a conceptual amendment, just to make sure, but to put in the ages where it says 8 years of age, but not less than 16. In place of the 16, I would like to put not less than 14. Let's see, wait a minute now. 13. Less than 13, that would be 12. So less than 14 would be 13. So that's
which is it?
It's less. It had to be, but less than 13. So I want 13 to replace 16.
Okay, that would be conceptual amendment number 4. Is any objection to that?
Yes.
Okay. Reverend Gruenberg objects. Speak to your objection, and then we'll take a vote.
I'd like to hear from Ms. Cashin on that, please.
Ms. Cashin, will you keep it short, please? I hate to rush you, but we have two other bills that we need that have great value also.
Yes, sir. I'm Cindy Cashin. I'm with the Alaska Highway Safety Office.
Please move the microphone closer to you.
And through the chair, Representative Wilson, could I have the question again?
I just want to change the age to 13 or younger. So it would be the actual age is there, and the actual age would be 8 through 13, including 13.
Ms. Cashin?
Representative Lynn, this would not affect through the chair, Representative Wilson. This conceptual amendment would not disqualify the state. We would still qualify because Section 5 is not required to qualify.
I do, yeah. Representative Seaton, and I have a reminder of staff that session starts at 11. We have two more bills to go. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the part that we're talking about is Section 5, and where we have as determined by the driver, if that person that has the driver's learning permit, they've got to have someone else in the car with them.
But they're not the driver.
They would be the driver.
No, they don't.
They're under the supervision of an adult.
To have a learner's permit, you have to be under the supervision of a licensed driver in the car. And that person who would be doing that would be the driver. It's in their determination. We've specified that as determined by the driver. So
should be the licensed driver?
Yeah, probably should say licensed driver.
Do we want to add the word license? Excuse me.
No, we're going to have to. Go ahead.
So, Mr. Chairman, the discussion is that I think that the very unusual circumstance that, that you're talking about, that we have somebody who is has a driver's permit who fits that category, has the option of determining what's appropriate for them. If they're uncomfortable in a booster seat, they wouldn't be using a booster seat because it would be inappropriate. So I think that it's handled since we've specified in the determination of the driver. And so I'm going to oppose the amendment for that reason.
Okay.
I think it's
all right. The choice have do it to maintain the amendment, withdraw the amendment. Any objection?
What? I would like to just hear briefly from the sponsor, yes or no, do you support the amendment? Through the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for having me up. No, the answer is no.
You do not. Okay. Would you take the roll, please?
And I just want to make a, make the statement that, that it would read then 8 years of age, but less than 14 years of age.
I thought you said 13.
Well, thank you. But less than 14 would be 13.
Take the roll.
Representative Gatto.
No.
I'm sorry, something was moving. I can't hear you.
No.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Grunberg.
No.
Representative Peterson.
No.
Representative Seaton.
No.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Chair Lynn.
No.
2 yea, 5 nay.
Okay, Amendment 4 did not pass. I'll entertain a motion on the basic bill, SB 72. Representative Seaton.
I'd move CS for Senate Bill 72 as amended, and that's version T from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendation.
Is there any objection?
No.
If not, Senate Bill 72 moves from committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Okay, and our next bill is...
We should have changed this to 70.
I'm going to go to SB 58 next.
Carl.
And is somebody from Representative Gerald's office out there? Okay, good. Because we're going to do the Marmite bill, then we want to go to Representative Gerald's bill. But first, we're going to talk about Marmots.
Which
we're on Marmots.
Is that 58?
Yeah, I think you got the pictures.
To me with my family.
You're at ease. Back on record, we consider an SB 58 sponsored by Senator Menard. Welcome to our committee. Please.
Thank you very much. Good morning. My name is Senator Linda Menard, and I am the sponsor of Senate Bill 58. With me is my staff.
For the record, Michael Rovito, staff of Senator Menard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and allow Michael
Senate
if that's...
Bill and, if you'd like to present it.
Okay.
Thank you very much for having us here this morning. Senate Bill 58 is an act establishing February 2nd of each year as Marmot Day. By doing this, we'll create a localized Alaska version of Groundhog Day. While many people in the lower 48 spend every February 2nd honoring Punxsutawney Phil or some other incarnation of the famous groundhog, Alaska could be honoring our marmot, which lives in abundance in the state and embodies this state's nature and natural beauty. By creating Marmot Day, the state will have a new tradition, and there's no doubt about how important traditions and symbols are to a state. Right now, we have just about 700,000 people, residents of the state of Alaska. Somewhere around 130,000 of those residents are students. Establishing traditions for these residents and students is important legislation. Beyond the tradition, whenever Alaskans talk about their state, talk usually turns to how unique our way of life is, from giant mountains to our extreme weather, to the differences from the way we live compared to those in the lower 48. A Marmot Day holiday will only uphold that uniqueness of Alaska. Beyond that, a tourism niche could certainly be created around Marmot Day. Tourism, the sponsoring Senate, Senator Menard, is very passionate about tourism, and there's all sorts of activities or events that could be stylized around a marmot day. We have support from the Alaska Zoo, is very interested in this bill. The Mat-Su Borough School District has also weighed in and just talked about the educational opportunities for their students to have a day where they could wrap some lessons around. Others who have testified in support have been Chuck Heath and John Binkley, who is a guru of tourism in this state. We're very excited about Marmot Day, and I moved up here from Cincinnati, Ohio, where there are no marmots. And when I came to Alaska and went out and did some hiking and saw just the abundance of marmots and how amazing they are, and I mean, what a great symbol to have. And I believe by having a Marmot Day, I mean, that would mean something so much special to the state to establish a holiday such as this. So I hope that the committee here will support our Marmot Day bill.
What's the height, weight, and ages?
Well, we decided if they're not tall enough, they'd have to go into a booster seat. We should have brought it here and put the marmot in the booster seat.
Well, I thought about that.
But they said no props.
I'd actually thought about that for our previous bill, having some demonstrations, and I could mention some names. Okay, any questions for the sponsor in this bill? Let me start making a new list here. Checking it twice. We got Representative Seaton, who's next? Gatto, and then Johnson, right? Okay, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed in the fiscal note about burrowing into the legislation, what had a zero fiscal note, but I wanted to clarify that since it has a zero fiscal note, I'm presuming this is not establishing a new state holiday.
It is not. It is not.
Thank you. I just wanted to get that on the record.
And I just
and through the chair to, I just wanted to say that, you know, because we're only celebrating here our 50th year of statehood, it's important to know that for 233 years, most of the other states have been in the Union, and so they're way, way ahead of us for symbolic things that we can use for traditions, and so we've done quite a bit of research, and we are by far on the bottom as far as recognizing, you know, we have Seward's Day, Alaska Day, but, and so I know our work here is very vital. We deal with very important issues like stimulus, oil prices, social issues, but also having been on the school board and being a certified teacher myself, I can tell you there's nothing more important to school children, and you can think back on your own school years, is when you pick an animal. Our mammal, of course, is the moose. Our ocean mammal is the bowhead whale. And if there were to be a in the sky mammal, what would it be?
I'm not going there.
It would be the bat, I'll tell you. But so, I mean, you know, certainly we don't want to get way off where, you know, we want to enjoy ourselves, but we do want to recognize that almost 20% of our population in Alaska are students from K to 12. And so that's why I'm bringing forward a few symbolic things that we can add to our list. And I think it's noteworthy, and I certainly hope I have your support. Thank you.
Are they related genetically to the woodchuck and the what's the what is he? I mean, groundhog and woodchuck.
Yes.
Are these all the same general family?
They are.
Okay.
That's correct.
Any questions for the sponsor? Representative Gatto?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I've been in Juneau for my seventh year, and on February 2nd, and we pull this marmot out of a hole, is he going to cast a shadow? I've not seen a shadow cast in this town.
No, I don't think anything casts a shadow in yeah. Juneau.
Oh. Anyway, I'm not prepared to answer that.
Okay.
No shadow over Juneau.
Okay. Reverend Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And mine goes along with that same tradition. I mean, the tradition is if Punxsutawney Phil comes out on February 2nd and sees a shadow, we have 6 more weeks of winter. I don't think we need a situation where we need 6 more weeks of winter, regardless if he sees a shadow or not.
What about 6 more weeks of legislature?
Well, that's what we're looking at here in this This committee seems like it's gone that long today.
Through the chair to Senator Johnson. I will comment that some committee members have suggested, my husband passed away on March 3rd, and 20 years ago he was very interested in this symbolic, having us use the marmot instead of the groundhog. And they suggested, because that would be closer to spring, but I think the intention and what I'm trying to get through is we have our own unique local hire, and that is the marmot. And so that's why I chose to keep it at February 2nd.
Yeah. Okay. We don't need to import any more animals to Alaska, I don't think. Right. Representative Wilson, then I'd like to go to committee discussion if we can.
Okay. I came to the committee today not liking this bill, but I changed my mind. I think it's kind of unique, and it would be neat for school kids to be able to say that, you know, that we don't celebrate Groundhog's Day here in Alaska. It's Marmot Day. So I think it's kind of neat.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Senate Bill 58.
First, I need to ask.
I do have one more.
Yeah, we need to check on testimony. Representative Johnson.
And I don't know if these are considered game animals. Are we affording them any type of protection that now that they're our official animal, they can't be shot or they're protected?
Can you?
I mean, I know people that hunt these for sport or food. I don't know for what. But if these become our official state animal, are we going to prohibit the shooting of the marmot?
Thank you. That's an excellent question, and I'm hoping to answer it correctly. And I think that they can be still hunted. That is our intent.
Go ahead. Through the chair, the bill isn't really establishing it as a state animal. It's creating the Marmot Day to honor the groundhog.
Or the
marmot. My apologies.
I'm sorry. excuse me.
In front of the wrong legislature here.
I know. Should be in Ohio again.
And through the chair to Representative Johnson, it's similar to the moose is honored as our mammal. And so that would be the same.
We still shoot.
And certainly we are still shooting the moose.
Okay. Is there anybody online to testify? Anybody in the audience to testify?
Thank you.
Yes, now we'll close public testimony, bring it to the committee for discussion. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Senate Bill 58, version R from committee, individual recommendations attached, fiscal note.
Fine. Without objection, this bill moves from committee. Okay.
Should ask for a roll call.
I'm tired already.
I'm telling you, it's been 6 weeks since we started this.
I'd like to go to HB 106.
HB 106. Go ahead and go to that one. It's at the beginning. It has an amendment. I mean, it has a CS. And the CS, no new CS, I got an amendment, but the CS incorporates Representative Seaton's amendment that he did in the last committee meeting.
Okay, let's have Representative Seaton move the CS, Paul. Put it off. Welcome, Representative Joel and Ms. Hensley. And would you kind of reintroduce where we are with this, and then we'll talk about the CS, but we need to adopt the CS first.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we adopt CS for House Bill 106, version W, as our working document.
And would you?
I'm going to object for the purpose of an explanation.
Thank you. Would you please explain that?
And, Mr. Chairman, that incorporated the single amendment we made last time, which was to change the word "and" on page 1, line 6, between corporations and municipalities to "or."
I'll remove my objection.
Yeah. Okay, so CS for HB 106 has hereby been adopted.
We changed it.
Speak any more on this?
This is the other
bill here, and tell us why would we continue today with it?
To the chair, members of the committee, good morning. Yes. Representative Jewell, House District 40. At this point, I think you have an amendment before you that we've worked out with Representative Seaton, but I would have...
Okay. Would someone care to offer this amendment?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton?
I'd like to offer amendment number one, which is 26LS0402/W.6.
And I'll object for discussion purposes.
And
Representative Seaton?
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we had had some conversations and discussion on the bill on how this could work for all the communities across the state, and I've worked with the sponsor on this to make sure that we incorporated all those areas and didn't eliminate any that were unintentional. And so that's what this amendment is meant to offer, so that the regional nonprofit corporations, which currently get the grants, if they would basically have a first right of refusal, if they decline to accept a grant, then in consultation with the commissioner, those grants can go through a municipality. And so it will expand the use of the VPSO in areas where it's much more economically efficient or some other efficiency for a municipality to administer the grant. It also changes puts in the definition of rural area with the population of less than 1,000 within the unorganized borough, or a borough if the community is not connected by road to Anchorage or Fairbanks. And we went through the entire list of all of the communities that have had VPSOs, and this definition includes all of those communities. And so I would like to ask the sponsor.
Representative Joel, would you
support the amendment, Mr. Chairman?
You do support the amendment.
Yes, Mr.
Representative Gruenberg.
Just one question, and that is on lines 21 and 22.
Of the amendment?
Yeah. How about a community like Eklutna? Does that have a VPSO?
Through the chair.
Through the chair, yeah.
Representative Gruenberg, no.
Would there be any possibility that...
No.
Okay.
Any possibility.
Representative Wilson. Okay.
I guess, first, I wasn't here when we had this up before, so I'm maybe asking a question that's been asked before. First of all, it's kind of hard for me to think of that somebody might not accept the grant, but maybe it's because some area isn't organized enough to write a grant, so another area would write the grant for them and turn it down, and then they could give it to somebody else. What was the reason for?
Okay. Good morning. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Hensley. I'm an intern in Representative Jewell's office, and through the chair, Representative Wilson. There is exactly this situation where a nonprofit does not wish to administer the program, and this is in the Northwest Arctic region. The conversation has been going on for about 5 years between the nonprofit and the borough. The borough wishes to administer the program for the villages in the region, but the nonprofit doesn't wish to, just because their specialty is in a different area. They're not really equipped to do this. So,
okay, that's
fine. President Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my question revolves around a specific community, Chitna. They're connected by road. Would they not be eligible for a VPSO under this, even though the regional corporation, are they a municipality? I mean, where would they fall into this? They're under 1,000, and if they wanted one, could they not have one if the corporation said no?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'm not sure I'm going to get specifically to your question, but if a regional nonprofit were to, if these are VPSO eligible communities, I'm not sure what that would do to Chitna, whether they have one currently or not.
Mr. Chairman, nor do I.
They're in the unorganized.
They're in the unorganized, so they would.
So they would be eligible. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions on the amendment? On the amendment, is the objection maintained?
I think, Madam Chair, did I have the objection? Yeah, I would move the objection.
So amendment number one has hereby been adopted. We're back to the bill itself. I don't know that we Did we do public testimony last time? I don't recall. We did, and it's been closed. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And of the sponsor, you know, and the chip just came to mind, and I'm and I understand that you worked with the maker of the amendment. Are you comfortable that any community that might benefit from a VBSO situation is eligible under the bill? I want to make sure that we're not excluding someone who might want it. There are no communities, and just for the record, make sure that we're this is an inclusiveness as opposed to excluding type of legislation.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I do believe that any community that wishes to and that's eligible wouldn't be excluded.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted that on the record because I think that is the purpose of this.
Okay. Any further questions to the sponsor of the bill? Any committee discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move CS for House Bill number 106, State Affairs, version W, out of committee with individual recommendation and enclosed zero fiscal note.
Okay. Representative Seaton?
That is 106 as amended. W.
As amended.
As amended. Okay. Without objection, it passes from committee. Congratulations. We.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. For the information of the committee, we're still trying to put together our schedule for this coming Tuesday. We have several Senate bills, I believe, in the hopper there. They have to have priority, and I'll bring in House bills as I can, but only after the Senate bills have been addressed. Yeah, that's been my direction. Is there any further business to come before the committee? I'd like to thank everybody for coming in so early this morning, and we learned a lot about seatbelts. We are adjourned at 10:15.